Welcome to finally, we're just giving up on live streaming. We're recording live from Crockfest here in sunny, humid Angleton, Texas.
It is humid out here.
So Bryant, you want to tell us what I told you in Columbia about comparison?
You know what? After being in Meta Department in Columbia, there are a lot of similarities to East Texas, Southeast Texas. I mean, what were some that you pointed out to, like the humidity?
The kind of low-lying agricultural areas that can be easily flooded, somewhat raised rows and all that stuff. And the plants kind of look similar as well. and the Akistrodon looks similar to the Bothrops down there, kind of.
A bit. No, I mean, first impressions of just being back here in Texas is that it's beautiful, hot, humid, and then, you know, saying that we're here in Croc Encounters. First impressions of the place is that it's big, it's beautiful. This is how crocodiles should be kept and maintained.
Yeah, but you want to hop on?
Or? Yeah, sure.
So we're actually joined by our first guest of the day. Is an old buddy of mine who I first met at Crocodile Encounter is my buddy Andrew Austin. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here, man. You know, I worked here for about 5 or 6 years, and you know, still try to stay involved in any way I can. Chris Dieter is an amazing guy. He treated me so well, and he does amazing work with these animals. So I was happy to come back for Crockfest. We always talked about having Crockfest here all those years I was here, and it, you know, finally made it happen. It's really exciting, some great people here, and you know, it's just a celebration of crocodiles. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's only just starting, you know. It's still not even 2 yet, you know. People are still rolling in, and you know, considering your ties with this place and just crocodilian conservation in general, you've had other intimate, I guess, projects or involvement in the past, right?
Yeah. So here, probably the coolest thing I did here was working with the Chinese alligators. I was involved with our first successful, you know, breeding of Chinese alligators. And it was the first time a U.S. facility had been successful with breeding Chinese alligators in a long time, and that was pretty special. And they've had a couple more successful years with those, that same pair. And you know, when I was first here, maybe those first 2 years, I went down to Belize and interned with the Crocodile Research Coalition. And kind of over time, you know, Dr. Marissa Tejas and Chris Dieter kind of got acquainted through my, you know, my internship. And now there's a lot of collaboration with that, which has been cool to see between Crocodile Encounter and the CRC. So yeah.
How so? Like, what are some collaborations?
Well.
Like buying property?
Yeah. So the you know, Crocodile Encounter basically helped, you know, secure property down there for the CRC to function as a croc rescue and education center. I'm not up to date on what's happening now, but last I heard, there's a lot of good stuff happening, getting new ponds built, and you know, Marissa's working really hard down there, you know, doing all the education and all the science. And yeah, it seems to be, so far, a very successful collab, and I wish I was more involved with it, honestly. I've just been out of the loop.
When I first met you, you were, you had a shorter haircut at the time, but you were, you're kind of the first one to introduce me to East Texas herping. I mean, I tried and failed the previous summer I was down here and doing a little herping.
Right.
All I found was some crayfish snake, which, are those Gulf crayfish around here?
We have the Graham's crayfish snake, and well, formerly it was the Gulf crayfish snake or glossy crayfish snake, but now they, you know, the taxonomy changed and they're calling them Liodides now, the Gulf swamp snake or glossy swamp snake. And that's the more common one. No, that's the Graham's, which makes sense, but...
Yeah, so... Found plenty of those down there, ribbon snakes, and out in Beaumont. But
if you cruise, you know, any wetland area around here in the evening after a good rain, you're going to find a lot of swamp snakes and a couple of Graham's crayfish snakes too.
And we were talking earlier on about nature scenes in general. You were saying, you know, ribbon snakes galore here, but when it comes to garters, and specifically eastern garters, they're more of a rarity.
Yeah, that's a very unique species for here. They exist here in as a disjunct population, hundreds of miles away from the Eastern Garters, you know, east of the Mississippi. So it's kind of a cool example of biogeography, I guess. You know, sometime in the past, as the landscape and climate change, they kind of got left out here as things began to dry up. And they're really unique. They're very specialized in their habitat. They're not like garter snakes elsewhere that you can just find anywhere. They're only found in these really high quality remnants of Columbia bottomlands habitat. It's like real grassy, a lot of sedges in these bottomland hardwood forests. And only the cool herpers with good taste know about them. There you go.
Yeah, that's why I found with you, mm-hmm. herping, going to the one night you said was a timber hotspot, but okay, I didn't have any timbers there. But
yeah.
Don't worry, I didn't save the location, so it's lost to me for now. So
that's a sensitive spot. Yeah, there's not too many places to find timbers in this county, and when I found that spot, some older guys that, you know, I ended up working for one of them. He realized that I found the spot, and they'd been going there for years, and it's one of the few places you can find timber rattlesnakes this close to Houston, because, you know, Houston's urban sprawl is so bad. So when I found it and they realized it, I kind of got sworn into a pact with them that I would never share it with anybody, and we've kept it till this day. So, you know, some gatekeeping is good around here, because the Houston herp scene is pretty crowded, and the spots get, you know, pretty tore up when you get too many people going to them. And this one, it's also, you know, technically private property. It's part of the National Wildlife Refuge, but just not a good look if people are, you know, crowding up in there. But it's a very unique spot in the Columbia bottomlands that, you know, it's one of the few places you can see, you know, garter snakes and hordas like that.
I kind of saw a lot of lifers with you. My first copperheads were with you.
Right
You threw a copperhead at me.
I've heard this.
I think, I don't know whose fault it was, I think both of us, but I think we may have hit your lifer, actually, copperhead, when we were cruising. I didn't see it, or you didn't see it. Maybe I'm thinking
it was like
somebody.
A little tiny one?
Yeah, I think
so. I remember I had to use
it. Was right that time of day in the evening when snakes are moving, but the light is too dark for your headlights, but too light for natural light, or too dark for natural light.
But bright enough that headlights don't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. We missed it. I think that was your lifer, wasn't it?
It might have been. I remember I was kind of torn up about it at first. But then you told me, it's like, oh, don't worry, it's like most common thing out here. So.
And the copperheads are interesting here. We're very close to the contact zone where, you know, I guess formerly now it's the eastern copperhead and the broad-banded copperhead. But I still know them as southerns and broad-banded copperheads.
So there's no Osage influence?
No, that's, you know.
Maybe I were curious about that.
Yeah, no, here it's just... the old taxonomy is southern copperheads are basically from the Brazos River east. Once you hit the Brazos and the San Bernard, you start getting into broad-banded phenotypes. And then that's broad-banded all the way until you get to proper desert, like Crockett County, Pecos County, like kind of the western edge of the Edwards Plateau, you get Trans-Pecos copperheads. And they're found all the way into the Davis Mountains, Big Bend region.
But now they've lumped them into...
They're all broad-banded.
Pithecast or whatever.
Latissinctus.
Is it Latissinctus?
And I've refused to recognize it. Especially when I'm in... I was in West Texas 2 weeks ago, and I told everybody in the vehicle, I was like, when we were going out there, I was like, nope. Like, if we're referring to copperheads, they are Pithecaster. And we're not going with anything else.
Good man.
They're so unique out there, man. They got these beautiful ventrals. I think Pictogaster means something about their belly, painted belly or something. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
You're right. I think it does have paint.
Yeah.
You
know, and they got this beautiful maroon.
Picta, painting, gastralia. Yeah. So, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
And we found one. We found a nice one. That's only the second one I've seen out there. I've seen one in Langtree. It was kind of lame looking. Almost looked like a... I hate to admit it, kind of looked like a broad-banded. Didn't have that sharp gray contrast.
Well, you know, the copperheads that Nate was seeing last night were pretty muted. I mean, as adults, are they still somewhat muted, the copperheads?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean,
or do you get
it's a pretty typical
ones?
Look around here. The coolest southerns around here are in the longleaf pine savannas, about 3 hours northeast. Some of them are like real pink, pinkish hues. That's a pretty standard look, which I saw for the southern tier.
Yeah, well, not y'all, just me. But he decided to fly in a lot later than I did.
Oh,
I see. So I was just killing time.
The intergrades that you get, like when you hit like the San Bernard River drainage, kind of a couple counties in that area, some really cool intergrade copperheads that have like brick red bands, you know, kind of getting that broad banded look and less hourglass bands, more straight bands. They're pretty cool.
Yeah. And on top of copperheads, got my lifer water moccasins with you.
Yep.
Fortunately, that one wasn't tossed at me either. let's see. Louisiana green water snakes. I remember saw
Mississippi
those.
Greens, yeah.
Mississippi green, yeah.
Cyclopean. Those are cool. Those are kind of like a. It's interesting when you hit the when you start at the salt marsh right on the coast. You get the, you know, the Clarkii, the salt marsh snakes. Then you get a little bit further, starts to transition into the kind of brackish freshwater marsh. You get Mississippi green water snakes, and you get like intergrade broad banded salt marsh snakes. And when you get to the fresh stuff, it turns into plain bellies and diamondbacks and, you know, pure broad-bandeds. It's kind of a gradient of the rodeo, going from salt to fresh. It's kind of neat. You can cruise down one road and get that gradient in some areas, too.
I'm noticing it's kind of nature scene galore.
Oh, yeah. It definitely is, yeah. Which I love.
Mm. It kind of makes sense with how this is like a low-lying, very waterlogged area.
Yeah, our coast here is a lot different. You know, like you go to Florida and even like Mississippi and some of those areas, there's not, you know, 100 miles of wet prairie and then into marsh and then the beach. It's just pine forest beach. You know, there's not that like real swampy, you know, kind of gradient.
Like integrated habitat.
Yeah, exactly.
Very distinct, the transitions.
Yeah. And the cool thing about it is the coastal prairies are super productive for just cool diversity, plants, animals.
Man, there's so many birds. I didn't take my camera out at all this morning. I'm kind of kicking myself. That's how, you know, I'm trying to become a bit more of a birder.
Oh, man, I got sucked into birds. It's hard not to. We live in such a great place for them.
Yeah, y'all do.
Springtime, you go out and see 200 species in one day. It's a lot of fun, but we don't got a nerd about birds right now.
The inferior archosaurs, I like to call them.
Hey, once they get bigger, then they're not that inferior.
You know one cool thing I'll say, though? When I was working out here, one day it was during the croc nesting season, and you know, you had, like, Nile crocs guarding nests, and then I walked up next to one of the ponds, and there was a killdeer. Also,
this is in Crocodile Encounter.
Yeah, at Crocodile Encounter.
Not in Africa.
The cool thing about Crocodile Encounter, so naturally, you see a lot of native species of wildlife. You know, a lot of green herons nest here and stuff. And you'll see natural predation out here. Like, the green heron chicks will fall in the water, and the alligators will eat them. It was super cool because, like, there was a Nile croc guarding a nest, and then next to it was a killdeer, this little shorebird, protecting its nest. But they act like they're injured, you know, kind of different. But it was like all this archosaurian behavior right next to each other is kind of neat.
Yeah. Makes me wonder if that was ancestral traits to them, or if they're just,
I don't know,
conversion evolution.
Yeah, I mean, the nest, the care of young is very interesting in crocodilians and birds.
Yeah. But, and the more you look at them, the more you start to see similarities between the two. It's like, oh yeah, I can see how your guys are actually closer to each other than the crocs are to lizards. So,
something about a baby croc when they when they're swallowing something, they like their little mouths are like chomping
yeah,
real
yeah.
fast. It's like a little bird, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. They I'm like, these are little archosaurs.
Well, birds do a lot of closed mouth vocalization,
right.
I can kind of envision the same with a croc, with the same thing. You know,
yeah.
the laser noise they do.
Mm. Right. Super cool.
Yeah.
So the nest building. I mean, the Chinese alligators out here would build these, you know, great big nests. Tiny little croc, and they build this nest, and they're climbing up on top of it. It's super cool.
Yeah.
Those ones are bittersweet, just because the captive stock is so rich, but where to put them, there's no more habitat left.
It's interesting. I saw someone recently in one of the groups on Facebook, they went to China and photographed wild Chinese alligators, but it looked like a man-made pond. But the description made it seem like they were in natural habitat. I don't know. But they're feeding on snails. And they got...
From what I've read, basically the only wild population is in like some farm ponds.
That's what I always thought, but the person that did this... posted this, they made it seem like it was, you know, out in some ag land, like, where these animals are still persisting in the wild in some way. I don't know. It was kind of vague, but
you gotta wonder about recruitment out there, you know? Is it just intellectual individuals at this point, or, you know, what's going on?
If you go on iNaturalist, there's like three observations in random spots along the Yangtze River. Yeah, and one of them is like right by a city. It's just out there in deep water alone. So it's probably not a good population there, but they're, you know, they're still like older animals kind of just drifting around, it seems like.
Yeah.
Which is kind of neat.
Yeah. It's kind of curious if they did have the chance to adapt, if they would adapt to agricultural settings the same way, say, spectacled caimans in South America would.
That's a great point. I was like, spectacled caimans seem to persist pretty well in like pretty degraded habitats.
But at the same time, it might just be the difference in between the different types of agriculture that's practiced in the Yangtze Valley versus Latin America.
Yeah.
Whereas Latin America, it's very well-defined canals and then dry land, whereas it's in China... The rice paddies is just a rice paddy.
There's no deep water.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, they got to have some sort of irrigation. I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like the picture I've always had of the Chinese alligators in their natural habitat is not very clear. I mean, it'd be cool to go over there and, like, really see what's, you know, what the deal is. It'd be a dream, I guess.
But. Yeah. Well, yeah, a few weeks ago we talked with James.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was talking. He was telling us that, yeah, there was a species of Tamistema that went extinct like back in like the 1700s.
Wow.
That was in southern China, southern coastal China.
That's very cool.
So I think it was Hania Sucus or something like that. Yeah. So it's interesting how that's... He brought up the point that it was interesting that that's not mentioned as recently extinct crocodilians, whereas everyone knows about Mechasuchus, it seems like.
Right,
so.
Right. Man, that's very interesting. I wonder what the cause was, if it was, you know, if that species was on its way out, or if it was human. Obviously, it had to be human induced, but
yeah,
that's some capacity, right?
Because like those areas have been inhabited by humans for a long time, and farming rice probably for a long time.
Yeah, well, if it's on the southern coast of China, it's just it might. I don't know. We don't know anything. I don't know anything about this thing's natural history, but if it was like a coastal wetland species, southern China's just so mountainous that it probably only had a very narrow band of territory to live on, so we've always been kind of on the edge of going extinct.
Kind of like jaguars here in the North America.
Right, right. The periphery of the range.
Yeah, always quite sparse, but still here.
Yeah. That's cool, yeah. I always learn something new on these podcasts.
That's why you have to come on more often.
Oh, man, need to.
Anyone can actually get a
popsicle.
Jade, we're doing a podcast.
How unprofessional of you.
Trying
to.
Got one of the original Croc Encounter people, Jade Rio. She taught me a whole lot. Shout out to Jade.
Yeah. Speaking of OG Croc Encounter people.
Got Matt
people.
Here too. Matthew Freeline. Another OG. Still does the summer camp here. And other stuff. No, you're good.
Yeah. So, yeah, just... Unfortunately, the live stream isn't working, so we're just recording it. Just going to post a video later, so just save ourselves a headache.
But, yep.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
There's the boss, Mr. Chris Dieter.
How are we doing, sir?
The big man.
Yeah. Learned a lot from him.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Yeah. But yeah, recently you've been really reconnecting with your Apache ancestry, right?
Yeah, you know, it's been kind of interesting, but, you know, being someone that grew up in Texas and I love Texas land and wildlife, it all kind of overlaps, you know. I wonder if there's something in my DNA that's connected to this land, because my ancestors have been here for a very long time and, you know, started... Yeah. Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god.
Basically, we couldn't get the live stream working, so we're just going to record it and post the video later. So,
I started hanging out with some of my relatives, and, you know, the Apache way just really took me in. And, you know, I sing in ceremonies now, and, you know, I go to sweat lodges once or twice a month.
How's that?
It's good, man. I connecting with your relatives, you know, being in the sweat lodge, it's all about, you know, the fellowship, being with your relatives, or singing together. You know, there's been a lot of emotions in there. We cry in there and pray, and, you know, we're singing these songs that have been passed down for, you know, generations on this landscape, and it's
a different sense of community.
It's a very different sense, you know. I guess it's given me a whole new respect for culture and, you know, spirituality and community, and it's all really powerful. So I've dedicated much of the last 2 years to, you know, really finding my way in the tribe. I grew up with my identity as a Native person. You know, I am mostly, you know, European. But the getting involved with the culture really helped me identify with Apache culture. But I need to find a better balance there, because I miss doing the herp stuff. I've been out of the loop. But it's all, you know, life's an interesting journey, and, you know, I just kind of go with the flow, and wherever I end up is totally fine. So,
yeah. If next herping trip might organize, want to come along.
Yeah. So I need to.
Don't know exactly when.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I gravitate towards the international trips these days. I did Suriname last year, which was cool. It's the last big trip I've taken. We saw a lot. We got anaconda, bushmaster, all sorts of stuff. Two species of coral snakes. You know, dwarf caiman. I think we got the smooth front.
Same here.
Which is kind of lame. I wanted to see the Paleosuchus. Palpebrosis.
I like those ones.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. I think another trip to South America is in the near future. I need to go.
It's needed. When you're in the tropics, it's like another way you're describing you reconnecting with your ancestry. I feel a reconnection, a resetting of the soul.
Yeah, yeah. You know? It's a very powerful place. Even if you're not, you know, I guess, you know, you have roots in that area. I don't, but I definitely felt a presence there from something.
Well, we're humans, and we come from nature. You know, we may try to distance ourselves, and for the most part here in Western societies, we do a good job of that, but we're still connected to nature.
I think go ahead, Nate.
Some might say we do a little too much of a good job of separating ourselves from nature.
Yeah. I guess what it is about the Amazon rainforest is it's really like, it's like the, people say it's the lungs of the earth, but to me it's like the heart of the earth. It's the last, you know, big expanse of nature that you just look out. I was on this mountain. I didn't even know there were mountains where I was going, but we're on this mountain overlooking the landscape, and as far as you can see, it was unbroken jungle, you know, and there's birds calling, and the buzz of the forest is just constantly, you know, on your mind. And I had a, you know, very powerful experience there. But aside from the diversity of herbs, just the place itself was incredible.
Yeah. We were talking about if we ever do another Colombia trip, what are some destinations we would go to, and we would probably think about flying down into the most southern corner of Colombia, right where the town that goes right on the Amazon River. Just so you can actually say I set foot in the Amazon River.
Yeah, because
that would be just such a bucket list moment for my life.
Yeah, because Colombia is very biodiverse. Like we talked about in previous episodes.
There's grasslands out there.
Regions, grasslands, Amazonia, Pacific lowlands, Andes. I mean, there's so much in that country. And we drove a lot. A little too much, as we should have. But as I told Nate before, we had...
I like hearing you say it, though.
We had to figure things out. So, no regrets, but maybe better planning.
I would like to go to the Amazon Basin proper, because in Guyana and Suriname, it's actually not, it's a separate watershed. It's the Guyana Shield. Yeah. So like there's no black caiman there, and you miss some of the other stuff. So I was, you know, in the Amazon ecoregion, but not in the basin proper. So I want to go to Peru or some other place next time I go down.
Maybe Ecuador. Maybe go up
Ecuador.
Ecuador.
Peru. Yeah.
We have a connection in Ecuador.
It's good to know.
That's half the reason I started the podcast, was to have it as a networking tool. So
exactly,
inspired and start networking.
Yeah,
and it's worked, man. Through your podcast, I started mine, and then I got connected to interesting people through mine, and it's just cool how it's like a domino effect. And I think, you know, through both of our podcasts, you know, we have mutual friends through it, like, you know, Jack and some other people. It's a lot of fun.
I woke up one morning when we were on the Columbia trip, and I was thinking, this all happened because I 2 years ago I thought he had a really poppin' Instagram page.
That's how it works.
Randomly invited him out on now.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought on a drive here I would have never gone to Crockfest if I never met right. you.
So, right. You
know, I would have been back to Texas, but not for this or anything.
Right, right.
So. Probably, what, the Rio Grande Valley?
Yeah, I like the Rio Grande Valley.
Oh, man, that's super fun.
RGB.
It's been interesting, man. I've been going down there for probably 10 years now. Haven't been a lot lately, but it's really blown up in the herping circles. There's so many people, and since I'm from the area, I'm like, get off my turf. But it can't be like that, you know. It's everybody's right to go herp down there and stuff.
It's everybody's just, right, but how they do it.
That is, yeah, you know. Hopefully, people have some basic ethics. But it's been interesting to see it.
For the most part, it seems like most people's ethos down there seems to be all
it's pretty
good.
It's pretty good. Know? It's really just like the big influencers go down there.
Yeah, but speaking of, you know, ethos of practical of good gatekeeping and herping, you obviously know a lot more about snake rope than I do. But I was kind of impressed with how everyone was united that if they saw someone who was basically being an asshole and making it, trying to ruin it for everyone else, they would always report the guy.
Oh, you report that shit right away.
Yeah. If you see someone just doing something out of line, you like find his car, take a picture of his license plate, and send it to the park range or stuff like that. So,
I mean, the thing is, at any moment, you know, the forest system, natural forest system, they could take that away from us at any time.
Oh, yeah.
That site. Because it's a research area. They could close that off to.
What's up, Brooks?
To people. To
what's up, man? At any I haven't time. Seen you in a while. Give me a handshake. You're growing up on me.
I know. Yeah.
Good to see you.
So. Yes. Which I think is a great thing that the community is just so up there, it's just so actively defensive in protecting themselves from basically some bad agent who would ruin it for everyone else.
Right. It's our natural heritage we have to protect from. So.
But yeah, another trip we should invite you on, I guess. But.
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to go. I was.
Yeah, especially you get there at the right time. Fall, you know, string of fall is different. I'm very limited experience there, but if you all get there, you get a bit of the autumn leaf change as well. Right. Just
like early October, I would recommend. Like we right. when they joined, it was later October. Not the most ideal, but we still made the most of it. It was pretty good.
Still also found what 20 cottonmouths in like 3 hours walking.
That's like an off day. That's snake rope.
I was talking about it earlier. I used to watch you know, before Instagram and Facebook, the only way to kind of like connect with other herpers was YouTube. So I'd watch like Herping with Dylan and Mike Pingleton, and I always wanted to go to Snake Road, you know, after watching that stuff.
Yeah.
Still haven't been though. I need to.
And like you alluded to before, a lot of the species you find in southern Illinois, you can find elsewhere.
Right.
And they could be more
a lot
common,
easier.
But it's just the melting point of southern species and
right.
eastern northern species. It's a very unique region that just comes together in southern Illinois.
Seeing cottonmouths on a rock bluff is very strange to me. You know, I'm used to seeing them in swamps and marshes.
Yeah.
So it'd be cool to see.
Yeah. There's a juvenile rat snake that was on the bluffs that.
Oh, real dark.
Yeah, and against that, especially against that white tree.
Very contrasty.
And just, it feels kind of bad that all my snake row photos are kind of drowned out by other trips. So.
What's kind of like the holy grail there? Is it like mud snakes or is that one
mud
of them?
Mud snakes are very milk snakes.
Milk snakes are pretty tough too.
Not tough, but it's not
yeah,
tough.
Right. So. Gotcha.
I mean, there's a freaking, you've seen like the Snake Road book, and they have a ratio. They have a cottonmouth to other snake ratio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So like you see 500 cottonmouth
to one red milk.
Snake,
it's red milks, so right?
Red milks. Yeah. Yeah. It's a spill forever.
Yeah.
Cinemize into triangulum, but
triangulum.
I don't believe it.
Yeah. No, screw the new milk snake taxonomy.
They call screw it all new snake.
They take all the milk snakes in Texas are all jacked up. They're calling like Louisiana milk snakes are gentilis now, and as well as the annulata in South Texas. Wait, no, those may have. I don't know. I don't know what the latest on it is, but it's a lot different. Anyway,
if you ever need to gain access to it and say it's on, you can just drive yourself crazy trying to keep up with North American colubrid taxonomy.
No, so not interested. It's cool. Some of it's cool, I guess. But
you want to dive into it, but yeah. Try to find some nice.
Zach Loffman isn't here to do that, so. Actually, I was talking with my academic advisor a few weeks ago, and she was like, yeah, the podcast might actually count for a few credits, research credit or two.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, going through my degree, so I was like,
That's super cool.
Already winning.
Save myself a whole extra class.
You're about to breeze through all these zoology and biology classes.
don't put that on me. I'm really looking forward to it because actually the state's herpetologist, Dr. I think it's Greg Lips, he's actually a professor at Ohio State. So.
Oh, cool.
So he runs like the Massasauga research projects in the state and stuff like that. So.
When I was taking herpetology at Texas A&M, I had already known the herpetologist at A&M through social media and stuff. And so when I took his class, he would like call me out, you know, stuff that like I may be a field herper, but I'm not a herpetologist. You know, he's like quizzing me on anatomy and stuff in front of the whole class. It was rough. It was rough.
Had it out for you.
You get a mic on you.
Yeah.
Why don't you get a spray bottle?
Oh my God, he's not gonna let me live it down.
Yeah.
I gotta attend a wedding here in about an hour.
So, but yeah. Something like that kind of happened to me when I was at Bob Jones, in that one of the zoology professors, he also ran the Serpentarium, so he knew me from working in the Serpentarium, so I was taking the vertebrate zoology class there.
Right.
And I got the reptile part, and he just opened the first few slides, and it was just random pythons. He's like, okay, let's see if you can get all these. I was like, great. I got most of them, but he stumped me on the Timor pythons.
Yeah.
So I was like, is this one for Somalia? He's like, no. It's like, no, these... Because he worked on Liasis. That was his grad project, was Indonesian water python speciation. So that's what he was nerding out on in the class. So.
I mean, there's so many facets when you dive into the world of herpetology.
Oh my God,
it's never ending. And that's why I love broad sciences like that.
We were getting really into the weeds about different life histories of frogs in like South America and stuff, and that's what stuff he started asking me questions. I'm like, dude, this is very obscure knowledge right here.
Yeah.
You know, there's frogs are so dynamic in their life history.
And not enough herpers give credit to them. You know, even myself. You know, I'm not an amphibian guy, but you know, I need to give them a bit more of attention.
I dabble really a little cool. bit. There's some unique species. We have crawfish frogs here, which are kind of
pretty cool,
associated with higher quality prairie remnants. But yeah, there's some cool stuff in South America. Of course.
I did make the quip that it seems like every other frog you see down there is just some other species of crowgaster or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
There's a lot of crowgaster. Yeah, those giant smoky jungle frogs were cool.
Yeah, I can't find the picture because the guy sent it to me for some reason my WhatsApp account like signed out and lost the picture. But I had gotten a smoky jungle frog down there. I kid you not, it had bodybuilder steroid nipples. I kid you not, it had nipples.
Oh my God. Are they, my frog taxonomy's not good. Are they leptodactylus? I can't remember. The smoky jungle frogs?
I can look it up.
They're not ranids, I don't think.
Maybe they are. I don't know.
You'd think they are. They look like a bullfrog, but I think they're actually closer to like a...
Leptodactylus,
yep,
pentadactylus.
Yep. I thought so. That's kind of I always thought that was kind of neat about them because, and they're also they're just living like out in the forest, and they're just like you see one and you go to grab them, they jump in a hole. You know, they're not always near water. Very strange frogs.
But I was making the comment as Brian that those southern leopard frogs I was seeing, they were just juice up on something. They were jumping more than I've seen any other frog jump in my life. They were just.
Yeah.
They clear across that road in like 2 seconds flat. So.
Right.
Almost like they call them leopard frogs for a reason.
Yeah, because when people think of leopards, jumping. They think of jumping.
True, yeah.
Leaping leopards.
Yeah. But, yeah.
There were so many frogs down there, I can't even remember. There was one really large green one that was kind of a main target. It's like a waxy something.
Like a horn frog?
No, it was a tree frog. A big green tree, like green frog.
It'll be like a masked tree frog, maybe?
No, it's a. Oh, whatever. It's a monkey, something.
Okay.
Phylomedusa.
Phylomedusa, that's it, yeah. What's the common name for it?
Waxy monkey frog.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. We found one of those. The thing was huge, man.
Now, those are somewhat intimidating frogs.
Oh, yeah. Coolest frog we have in Texas is the Rhinophrynus, the Mexican burrowing toad. And that's when, you know, they only come to the surface once every few years sometimes if there's, you know, prolonged drought. But you, if you do get like 4 or 5 inches of rain down there in those counties along the border, you'll hear them calling from miles away. Really
explosive breeders.
Yes. They come out. When they do come out, they are, it's, you know, a lot of breeding. But it's hard because it's all private land, so you got to find a spot where you can actually get close to one. Yeah. But that's probably the coolest, I would say the coolest frog we have.
It's kind of crazy how they calorically can actually breed when they basically spend almost no time hunting. It's like, where do you get enough food to make eggs?
Basically? I don't know what they do, dude. They're
cold-blooded,
strange creatures.
It's just amazing to me. And the efficiency of it all.
Even more so in amphibian cold-blooded physiology is even more energy efficient than reptiles probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But when you think about it, if you work it up, not trophically, but you know what I mean, like there's lungfish that will do that, cocoon themselves underground and estivate, and then amphibians, you know, amphibians will do that, and then reptiles will brumate. So there's layers to this in terms of brumation and being energy efficient.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
But we know we don't want to keep you waiting, Andrew. This has been fantastic having you on. This was a great chat.
You've been off already?
Hopefully not our last.
I might need to leave soon.
Just 2 o'clock.
We can still chat ourselves, but I know you gotta go.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Yeah, I gotta go to a wedding. My uncle's getting married, so no getting out of that one. But I'm gonna try to make it back. I live an hour and a half away, so I'm like, well, I can go to the wedding, take a nap, and then make it back for the evening. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, we'll try and text you. Yeah. I'll try and text you where we think we'll go. So
yeah, yeah.
Hopefully we'll go somewhere that's a bit closer to your neck of the woods than all the way down here.
So. Right, right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Until next time.
We'll see you.
See you guys. So, all right. Now we have to snag another guest, I guess. Or just kill time. Yeah, you know, it kicked him off right as everyone else just drained out of here, so there wasn't anyone else to grab.
Perfect timing, wasn't it?
Yeah. You just have that talent, don't you?
I drive the talent away.
Yeah.
Dieterson?
Yeah, he should be somewhere, but...
He was mentioning what, Mike?
Yeah, Mike, which...
I don't think I've met him ever.
I'm trying to think of all the Mikes I know. It's like...
Mike.
I know a lot of Mikes, so.
But, so do I.
So, but yeah, I guess we'll do a little catching up with just the two of us.
Well, you mentioned something to me that I was kind of surprised. You added a bit more to your personal collection.
I did. I got another scrub python. I decided to hurt myself again. So.
Yeah, you do like torturing yourself a bit.
Chinese king rats and pythons.
You know, there's a lot of similarities between the two. High, strong, nervous, biting snakes.
Very alert, very quick to pick up on you in the room, so.
Also quick to musk, is what I've heard. I mean...
I haven't had one musk on me yet, but I wouldn't rule it out, so.
Do you know what it is? A Highland, Southern, or Moroccan?
I think it's Maruki.
Or like this, is it a Barnick at least?
Well, I can pull up the Wharf Market Purchase Records to show you what they said. It was a captive bred, but yeah, thank goodness it was captive bred. It has a bit of a Southern Maruki. So
yeah, as of late in herpetoculture, you know, more and more people as they've held on to scrubs for longer, because for a time people would hold on to them for a couple of years and try different ways to breed them, and they would get frustrated and then move them on, and so those animals would just either grow old and pass on or just never be successful in reproducing them. But now, you know, there's more clutches on the grounds of most of the localities and subspecies. You know, Camaharos are getting common. That's the number one at the top of my head, and then Barnecks. Getting kind of common, but still an obscure python, arguably one of my favorites. I just wish they weren't so high strung.
Yeah,
you know,
also their size probably doesn't help them out either.
No, and that's why I find stuff like Helmaharas and I think it's not the Highlands that get smaller. What is it?
No, I'm thinking of the island.
It's tough. Nada?
Yeah, Nada. I'm trying to think of the islands.
I don't know the common name.
Tanimbar?
Yeah, Tanimbar scrubs. You know, they stay smaller. Obviously, they still can reach potentially 10 feet, but
I think
for a scrub, it's
manageable. 6 was more like the normal, so.
It's the average. Oh my goodness. So for those that aren't seeing, it's a beautiful
I'll probably put a picture up when I edit this, so.
But I was singing Python, so I remember that name. Yeah. Too bad we can't get King Horni, even though they get massive. They're just, to me, they're one of the most beautiful.
Yeah, stars. But they're also probably the most unmanageable in terms
most
of size.
Most dangerous, yeah.
And a thing that can actually pose a legit threat to your life, so.
Yeah, you see some of these snake catchers in Australia, and like the monsters they'll be catching. So, I mean, you know, 4.5 to 5 meter snake is obviously not terribly common, but also not uncommon, especially in the Daintree, in natural settings.
Yeah, which, if I was to do a first trip to Australia and I just had a week, I might do northeastern Queensland Daintree.
Yeah.
I know the guy who does those boat tours out there, so we follow each other on Instagram, so.
Oh man, I would want the legend himself, Ricky Matt, to,
to make things happen. He didn't react to my comment about how he needs to come up to the States and see Nerodia, so.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to get him out of the Southwest Pacific.
I mean, the fact you got him on your podcast when nobody else has done that, that's pretty nice to have in the catalog.
I do remember someone trying to shame me about it, so.
No, he's a good bloke. I like him. So it was just a scrub you've added, or what else have you added?
Just a scrub. I think that's going to be it for... Well, I might get... I probably will get the Jake, the Flippantin Jake. He has a rat snake that she has like a king spine or something like that. So
pet only?
Yeah, pet only. It's like for education purposes or something like that. So I was like... He said... Basically, I'll just pay shipping for it, so I'll just do that.
So like a Deckard's? I know he's like real specific with the rats.
I have to look up the message he sent. But might have been yellow, but...
And for those who don't know, Longleaf Reptilia? Is it? Yeah, Longleaf Reptilia on Instagram. That's his Morph Market page as well. So I think he still has baby rat snakes. So if you're in the mood for different locality rat snakes, he's one of the main guys to hit up for that.
And he doesn't even pay us for this sponsorship. Cheapskate.
So. Hey, love you, buddy.
Hey, long time no see.
Yeah, no. Got to sing off.
Yeah.
How you been?
Good, and you?
Ain't in there.
Howdy.
What's up, Johnny?
Johnny, yeah, Brian's.
Pleasure.
Likewise. I know you kind of want to keep off podcasts and stuff like that,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I don't really like my business being all out there. It's all good there.
Yeah, just the camera's facing this way, just so you know.
Oh,
so.
Well, whatever. Cameo will be fun, I guess.
Candy cameo.
Yeah.
Yo. Doing this all day?
Usually probably till like 3:30, 4 o'clock ish.
Okay.
So
hopefully you can use some good talks in.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully other people walk by.
Where's that other podcast? I'm gonna punch him in the mouth and say that Philippines are basic crocs. I don't understand why anybody likes them. They're just basic crocs.
They are very much not. No. No, they're little demons is what they are.
Yeah, I know, I love them.
Okay. All right, but let's see here. Trying to pull up what species he's thinking about.
I guess while we're here at Croc Encounters, what is your favorite, I guess, individual croc here?
My favorite individual crocodilian here? Oh, the thing is, I haven't kept up with track of how many have been moved out over the years.
Sure,
so it's like,
sure.
I don't know if my favorite crocs are even... No, my favorite crocs aren't... I don't think my favorite crocs are here anymore, so... Well, Boots, I think, is still here, so... Boots is a good gator. Boots is a great gator, so...
Is that giant one we saw?
Yeah,
oh
back
God,
there.
That dude was...
He's a unit.
He's like a solid 12-plus footer. I mean, my goodness. That thing's a giant. It's the biggest gator I've ever seen.
Okay. I can't remember what species, but it was the one that he mentioned on his podcast. He was looking to move out.
I'm sure it's like
back,
an
so.
Eastern, just I don't know what locality.
Yeah.
That's another thing with grass snakes, right?
Yeah, it's a taxonomic cluster something, so.
Yeah.
Cluster game word.
I mean, I know we got grays or midlands, you know, it's just I'm just keep sticking with grays. I know they revised that, but I'm just I don't know. I even like black rats, but even though that's the colloquial name I grew up with.
Yeah. I always just grew up with them as Alleganensis. So.
Alleganensis, yeah. Well, I think they're back to that.
So.
Hey.
Yeah, you know, I live close enough to that area. I'm out on the Allegheny Plateau as is, so I'll just call them Allegheny rats.
Okay.
So.
Well, you know, that opens up a topic. So, you know, obviously herping season is now, and it has been for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And we both, you know, we both lead busy lives, but we've gotten out in the field a little bit.
Here and there.
Here and there. And you were showing me that you visited a local wetland.
Well, not local to me. It was a solid 2 hours from where I live. But
okay.
Localish. Yeah. In the state.
In the state still.
So,
but
I don't know if I mean, it's a state park, so it should be good to give away. It's kind of publicly known, so.
It could be a descriptor, as nondescript as you want, but still, you went there, and what was popping?
You know what, it's a well-known enough state park, and herping there is easy enough, as is. It's Sheldon Marsh State Park. It's basically the old, former entranceway to Cedar Point. But yeah, that basically got demolished and turned basically a causeway with wetlands on either side, and that's allegedly one of the rare places in the state to see eastern fox snakes. However, every time I go there for eastern fox snakes, it gets skunked out. But I do see plenty of turtles. I see an eastern garter there. Apparently, there's butler's garter snakes there as well. I haven't seen them though. But yeah, I went up there a few weekends ago. It was the Sunday before Memorial Day. And went up there and got my Lifer Blandings turtle. Like, it's confirmed Lifer Blandings turtle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
I've seen the photos.
Yeah. Just that cute sunshine yellow chin. Just
the smiling turtle.
Yeah.
Some people call him.
And there's plenty of midland patents all over the place, which is to be expected in an Ohio wetland.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this just giant snapping turtle. It was just Hank. He wasn't out of the water, he was in the water, but he was in the shallow enough spot that you could see almost the entirety of his carapace and top of his head and neck. He was just lounging about in the sun, so.
Diesel.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And that, funnily enough, that was the one time I was like, you know what, I'm not going to lug around my 500mm. I'm just going to rock with the 300mm.
Oh, man. You still got some good shots from what you showed me. So,
yeah.
You know,
I'll probably put them up when on editing. But, yeah.
Some garters. Yeah, I mean, and for me, my herping season hasn't been terrible as well. You know, I've been able to go out quite a bit and explore locally. I've mainly stuck to my local haunts in central Illinois. You know, because we have a decent smattering of habitats, you know, from different prairie types like hill prairies, savanna, sand savannas. Those are the main habitats I frequent, and so bull snakes are always at the top of my list. I have not been fortunate yet, as I've seen DORs and hit on the road ones. So no bull snake yet, but you know, the season's still young for them. I did manage to randomly flip a prairie king in my home county, in an industrial area, no less, while on the job. So, you know, work snakes are always a blessing, you know. And it was a very pretty prairie king snake. Prairie king snakes are just, I mean, most of Lampropeltis is pretty elusive just due to their fossorial nature, but prairie king snakes especially are just, they take that to another level.
Yeah.
You know, it's very random when you find them. And this one had nice pink hues. Like this one I'll probably send you a photo of. It's a pretty snake.
Yeah. And then, of course, Eastern Hognose.
Yeah, from last show, obviously, my connection was pretty weak sauce. I wanted to have some in-field footage for you guys, but that didn't work. But
yeah,
you
could probably send a picture and I could put it
up
when I upload this. So.
And what was funny was that I caught a blue racer, and like the way the blue racer was posed on this gopher mount was picture perfect. Like somebody had posed it. It was like coiled and it was just on top, relaxing. And then this giant monkey just comes in and swoops in and grabs it. So I always think about it from the snake's perspective, how terrifying that is, but. Yeah, it was a beautiful young female, and then I go to put her back, and then I see a slithering in the grass, and from the tail I thought bull snake. I was like, yes, finally. So I'm running, I'm chasing after it, and then I get hands on it, and it's a freaking hognose. I couldn't believe it. Hognoses are not easy for me to come by, and I always count my blessings with those as well. So that was a great find. I'll share photos with that too.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's just.
Is that your indigo?
What?
Indigo.
Yes.
That is an awesome snake. I love them.
Thank you.
Want to bring her on?
She just
months on me.
I'm okay with the months. I love them.
She might bite you.
Okay. Let's take a gander. If you're up for it.
He won't sue.
Well,
well, then yeah, you are. It'll annoy you. So.
Okay, okay.
Most prominent industry in Illinois, lawyers.
Yeah.
The old age-old joke of biomedical labs replacing their rats with lawyers because they're easier to find, and the lab techs that grow much less emotionally attached to them than they do the rats. So. Oh, she's in shed.
Yeah, for you guys listening, I'm holding on to a Texas indigo snake, which are they're awesome. You know, Dermarkin, love the genus. Powerful, beautiful snakes.
So, yeah, just yeah, but she is deep in shed. Her eyes are blue.
Exesis.
Yeah. So. Which is kind of a shame that this is how we see her when indigos have just such beautiful coloration when they're out of shed.
Is that she has nice, lovely white specks.
Okay. Does she have kind of the typical Texas indigo orange throat? Or
whenever she gets scared, you have those like flat.
She inhales and puffs it out.
Kind of just makes her neck skinny and tall.
Yep.
Yeah. Kind of like those. Ganyosoma, those East Asian rat snakes and stuff like that. You see, when they feel around, they do like inverse cobra. So,
also, what's cool with the Texans is that they exhibit thanatosis more so than the others, where they feign death. You know, they play dead.
Oh, if you want to hop on the, did you see me?
I thought you said it was a freaking.
It's not a live stream, but it is recording, so I'm going to put the video up. So.
And so Texas indigos are native to the RGV region in Texas and even a bit more up north. So they have quite a somewhat decent range here.
So, yeah, well, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Matt. I am a former employee here at Crocodile Encounter. I do the summer camps now. I only left here to continue teaching, so I am a biology teacher as well as an AP environmental science teacher.
Well, how did it come about that you come to Crocodile Encounter?
I was 19, so a few years ago, more like 11. it was a nice college job. People knew my boss here, and he gave me a shot, and I've been here ever since. And I just fell in love. I already loved reptiles and such before, but it definitely took my knowledge and respect to a more professional level instead of just being the novice snake enthusiast or reptile enthusiast.
Yeah.
Did you get that crocodilian itch? I mean, obviously so, since you're still sticking around.
If you look at my leg sleeve, it's all gators.
Yeah?
So gators are my spirit animal. I love them to death.
So you say you run the summer camp program down here?
So,
want to do a little free advertising for that?
Sure. So for my zookeeper camp, it is 3 weeks in June. Each camp kind of has its own themes. Like the one that just got finished is just a flat-out zookeeper camp, so learning cleaning, husbandry. We do welfare checks, look for changes in animal behavior, talk about what could possibly cause it if we see anything.
Basically to let students know that you don't want to be a zookeeper.
No. They actually love it more than probably we do. but then they get to feed the alligators with tongs and such. Just get a nice up-close personal experience. I typically have small camps. So like this one, I only have 10 kids. Next week is only 9. And then the following week is going to be, currently it's at 6. And I try to keep it at around 10 to 15 kids. This way it's just small, personal, and then whatever they're interested in, we are able to actually dedicate time to the interest instead of saying, oh, that's cool, let's move on to this.
So you like those smaller groups?
Yes. Yeah. It's, especially since I teach high school. the kids that come are typically second, third grade. So that's a lot of, it's a lot of questions that I just explained.
Yeah.
But no, it is really fun. It's always fun to share my love and passion, whether it be the classroom or out here in 100 degrees in Texas heat.
I mean, educating is a tough industry, and it looks like you're in for it for the long haul, which is
I love
great.
It. Yes.
Which is great to hear.
But, well, you can't have conservation without education.
No.
So that's the whole starting point, and it's a real rewarding profession for me whenever the students or campers have that aha moment when they're like, you mean if this is that way and this is, yes, A plus B equals C. Yes.
1 + 2 = 3.
Look. Well, I mean, it's kind of like that quote, like people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And yes. It seems like you follow that philosophy to a T, which is
definitely
great to hear.
Steve Rowan,
rest in peace, my king.
Yes, it's kind of what kind of started, and I know it's very, what's the word, cheesy to say, but you are more likely to get interested and care when it is right in front of you instead of being on a TV
on a screen
10 feet in front of you. Mm-hmm. So like for my classroom, I have around 40 different individuals. anything from, I do keep a Nile crocodile in the classroom, the indigo boa constrictor, Wilma python, axolotls, white tree frogs.
So you're the cool teacher.
I breed hedgehogs. Yeah. My room is always full of everything. We have euros.
Oh, nice.
What else? We have cane toads, my favorite.
Stop playing with those down in Columbia.
Mm. Well, just don't lick it. It is a trip you won't come back from.
We did come back from that trip, though.
No, I'm saying.
Licking them?
If you lick a cane toad. Because if you lick a Colorado toad, apparently fun things will happen. I don't know. But if you lick a cane toad.
For professional reasons, you only know this from hearsay.
Oh, yes. Look here. I ain't trying to learn that. But no.
Seems like he zeroed in on something.
Well, you do have aimed at me.
Yeah. I'm just trying to work with her, get her used to being held.
Yeah.
I know that they can be nasty, and that she's going to be too big of a snake to have a nasty attitude. And too powerful of a snake. It is really interesting to watch her interact with her environment compared to the Wilma or the boas that I have whenever she's actually interacting with her habitat instead of just living in it, where she'll problem solve. It's fun to feed her because she literally grabs,
inhales.
It's ridiculous. She will grab it, push it up against the wall, and yes, just inhale it.
Yeah, yeah, reminds me of my gopher snakes.
Yes, that's
the
same.
So what would you say? Would you say it's like the captive herpetoculture came to you first, or like maybe were you in the field as a little kid chasing snakes around, or what came first?
So dad, we had deer leases, and instead of hunting deers, I would be looking for the snakes and frogs, and then putting them in my shorts and forgetting that they're there, and then mom find them when she's doing the wash, after the wash. I know, I was that kid, but you know, you quickly learn, you know, to remember to check your pockets, bring tubs so you can put stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
I did work at PetSmart for like around 4 years, 5 years, and that's when I discovered crocodile encounter, and that kind of sculpted my novice, I think I'm cool owning all these different types of snakes, to I can have a limited collection now and really appreciate them and enjoy them for what they are, instead of being that person that, and nothing against those people, it wasn't for me.
You're not the type of guy that wants to have 1,000 ball pythons in his basement.
Yes, like I don't have to have every single species.
You're at a different stage in life now.
Yes, yeah. Whereas like I have like 5 snakes. It's easy to
What? 5 snakes.
That's
incredible.
That's small.
That's what I'm saying. That's incredible.
Compared to what I have had. But, well, when you look at my collection in general, it varies from like I said, from my tegus to the crested geckos to the frogs to the toads to the salamanders, the axolotls,
the Nile crocodile in the classroom,
the hedgehogs, and then I breed hedgehogs, so I have about 10 of those. So it's just,
how does that go about? I'm curious, breeding hedgehogs.
Yeah, mammals are annoying. But no, it's really fun. I use them for my genetics unit mainly, where I can show them different genetics that go on. We can explain heterozygous, homozygous traits.
Oh, wow.
And then that's when I also will include ball pythons. You can't talk about genetics and hets without talking about
ignore ball pythons.
Yes, and
sure.
It's something that the kids think is cool. I'm personally not a huge fan of all the morphs, but I
don't like how most kind of brown out as they get older. Like, they maybe a lot of them are cool looking, but they kind of brown out.
Yes. I mean, there are some people, and I know some people that take it serious and they do their own genetics charting, Punnett squares. They do their own genome mapping to make sure that they are lessening the possibility of any defects. Or any, because you know, you are, and this is what I teach with the kids too, is that just because you're breeding for this one gene, there's other genes that are coming with it, and as this gene gets stronger, so are those. So what are those genes? What are they carrying? Like I've talked about, whenever I worked at PetSmart, we would get piebalds when they first were like the coolest thing, like $1,000 snake. Now it's like, what, 200?
Yeah. Personally, I never got the hype behind them. I was like,
I didn't.
It's like, when it coils up, it just looks like something a bird leaves on your windshield.
I mean, I thought it was cool, but not $1,000. But,
not with those PetSmart prices.
But then the snake would be having seizures or having tremors. And so I kind of brought that into the classroom and showcased that this is a genetic trait. And that, you know, what's it called? When you narrow down the gene pool, you get less diversity in the genes that are being shown. And so if you are trying to get a white snake, yes, you're going to keep breeding the white snakes together to get a stronger gene. But that parent also carries a gene for tremors or for such and such. So just to help show them that genes are how you can concentrate them, but also how they come with their own baggage.
How they transfer.
Yes.
With their own baggage.
Like
the flow there.
Yeah.
Gene flow.
Yeah. Like those foxes that they're been bred for like what, 50, 60 years for
friendliness or whatever.
For friendliness, for basically being domesticatable, and all of a sudden they have been developing these other traits, like their facial features change, their ears are like floopy and droopy or something like that. So yes. I can't remember the exact. It's not Pavlov's foxes.
Not Pavlov.
Yeah, no, I know. It was someone else. It's some other Russian sounding name. So.
I'm drooling already thinking about it. Pavlov, drooling dog.
Okay, I see in there. Yeah, but crazy to think that Annabelle might be like that. In, what, 6 months?
I mean, she's about this long, but yeah, she probably by the end of this year might be this thick. So that'd be a decent sized snake.
Yeah.
I have a Chinese king rat.
Oh, nice.
They're kind of similar. Yes. They get the same size.
Yes, very, very much so.
Really cool. But no, it's good to promote that kind of mindset, or at least pop ideas of ethical breeding, ethical herpetoculture, just in general, you know?
Just to, because, I mean, it's not going anywhere.
It's only going to get stronger.
When we do talk about genetics and not necessarily controlling genes, but being able to selectively breed versus natural selection. What is the difference? Why is one better? Whether it is talking about crops to livestock to humans, we just don't talk about eugenics. we just skip that little topic. But just to... Just so my students
I think Jamie DeGreek has something to say about that. But.
Oh Lord. Just have a broader scope of the real world and science and technology at its finest.
Yeah. So.
Well, it's been nice chatting with y'all. I am going to go figure out what I'm going to be doing next.
Oh yeah, we appreciate you letting us the handle. You got a name for this gal yet or anything?
She does not have a name yet because I haven't... Well, I haven't sexed her, and I'm just not really big in naming them until they try and kill me, because then that bond's made, right? Mm-hmm. But no.
First blood contact.
But right now, it is Morticia. If she stays a female, and then if it turns out being a male, then Monty.
I was gonna say Morty, but yeah.
I know.
But then someone in your class is gonna make constant jokes about it. So. Yes.
So thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Nice talking with you. So.
All right. So, and.
You. Bye,
guys.
Yep. Ciao, ciao.
So.
So that was fun. It's always fun to play with Indigo.
Always.
Not bitey at all, but obviously she was pretty deep in the dice.
Yeah. So we might do a little bit more playing around with Indigo's here in, what, September?
Maybe. I'm not sure what you're alluding to. Oh, okay. I know what you're
doing. Classic Indiana Indigo. The very rare phenotype. we're probably gonna go to Kluberfest. Hopefully we'll have everything figured out by then in terms of tech on that end. But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that'd be fun to run something up for that.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
So we'll see how that goes, but hopefully, like I said, hopefully better than this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
Well you guys are still getting us, just not the picture we wanted.
Yeah. But yeah, hopefully, it'll be actually at a hotel which have a strong Wi-Fi signal, so that would, for starters, that would help out immensely.
Oh yeah, it won't be kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, well, not really in the middle of nowhere, but...
Yeah. Ish.
Yeah, so, but yeah, while we're waiting for someone else to come by that we could just lasso in, what's some species you hoping to see in the next 24 hours?
So yeah, since we are trying to make the most of our trip here in East Texas, we are trying to get not only lifers, but just overall just some decent herping in. So it'd be nice to see, you know, some Lampropeltis, some speckled king snakes. That'd be nice. And Aatrox, obviously, which would always be nice to see. Timbers, if we can, if we're in the right spots. I think the goal potentially later tonight is a row cruise and see how that comes about. But there's a decent smattering of herps to be found in Texas. I mean, I think you alluded to this, Nate, that you know Texas has the most herps of any state. I think only California is.
Well, maybe Florida.
Maybe Florida, if you include the non-natives, but Texas and then California. So yeah, very diverse here. So,
yeah.
I really don't know. I don't know what.
Yeah, getting Western mosaic would be pretty high up there as well.
Okay, that would be our unicorn, along with timber. That would be our unicorn.
Yeah.
Western mud.
So, but hey, maybe we can flip up some kinks or something like that. Who knows?
We can try.
Oh, buttermilk racers. That's.
Ooh, I forgot all about them.
So, yeah, those are classic species.
Now, that's a Texas specialty. Even though I think they butt up in Louisiana, but for the most part, those are a Texan specialty.
I've heard a reference that the Louisiana ones are kind of ugly in comparison to the ones out here. So let's see if we get our next victim.
See if we get the big guy on.
Yeah, the boss croc.
Boss croc. I seen a documentary that called that. I think boss croc.
Yeah, it's all about him too. Yeah, I think Kim Kennan make a video about it.
Shout out Kim Kennan, doing it right.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping he'd show up here, but so far no show. But
he's a family man.
Yeah,
and we both kind of aren't. Kinda.
I'm probably even less than you, but yeah, you're more family man than I am.
Just a bit.
So, but yeah.
Oh, but yeah, no. You know, I'm going to do a few more passovers here at the facility, but still, I'm pretty blown away with how it is here in Crocodile Encounters. Definitely worth the visit.
Yeah, I need to get you in that baby croc building at some point or another.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
So, yeah.
Oh, we did see Tamistima, and I mistakenly took it for a Johnstony. I thought it was a freshie. Just, it looks so muted from drying off. I was like, are you sure? I could not tell. But now we have confirmed that is Tamistima. So I have finally seen Tamistima in the flesh, and it is glorious.
If not the wild, but
second best. We'll get a wild one someday.
Yeah, hopefully.
You know.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I don't know if we'll be able to get you an American alligator or not this weekend. But
it's no worries. I found my lifer gator here in Texas, and if I were to see more, that'd be great. If I don't, I'm not too bothered. I've seen plenty here.
Yeah.
The majority of them are what? Nuisance gators, quote unquote, a majority.
Yeah, some of them, yeah.
And then obviously some that were raised in, like, up north.
Yeah.
Or taken some, down here.
But yeah, like the big one, they saw.
Root or whatever.
Boots.
Yeah. Again, biggest gator I've ever seen in my life. I mean, a mammoth gator, big old bull.
Yeah. So, and he is. Yeah, it has one of the more workable personalities from my experience when working out here in terms of feeding shows and stuff like that. So I don't know if that size just breeds a certain confidence that makes working with him a bit easier or not. But
I would think so, you know. Even though the big gator that they have at the Phoenix Herpetological Society, that one, since it was pretty much isolated for most of its early life, it's not as gregarious as others.
Yeah.
I mean, gators have that personality. They can either be friendly and gregarious or kind of cold-hearted and, I don't know what you call it. So, Antisocial.
Yeah. So, yeah, but that's kind of the thing with most crocs is they do have, they are a lot more social than other species. So I got the microphone, so let me say good. But they're a lot more social than other species, so, of reptile. So, you do have to kind of keep them in some sort of,
group setting.
Group setting. Otherwise, they become antisocial and basically start getting start listening to Linkin Park. Yeah, sounds good. We'll let you know. Start listening to Linkin Park and go like, it's not just a phase, Mom, and all that, and don't use deodorant, and yeah, basically become the antisocial school dropout of the croc world.
Let's be real, a hormonal teenager is what they become. If they're isolated for too long growing up. But, you know, in terms of the croc world, I know salties are not known for being gregarious unless it's specific events, like mullet runs, but
yeah.
Niles, I guess, would probably be
they're up there. They're very, way up there in terms of their sociability.
Yeah.
So, that's it.
I mean, there's a freaking book on the social lives of crocodilians, and
yeah. So.
And it showcased the, gharials are quite social as well.
So, yeah, there.
He doesn't have any gharials here.
No, but he has a gavialid.
He does have a gavialid. Soon the gharial, the mistema.
Yeah, not a false gharial.
No, not my favorite.
Because they're 100% real. They keep it 100.
They keep it buzzing.
So, yeah, but what's been your favorite species you've seen out here?
Well, it's my first time seeing Cubans. Obviously, I am a Cuban nut. That Sucus actually impressed me as well.
Yeah.
Being so similar to the Niles, but obviously
it might not have been Sucus. I don't know.
It's different. I mean, I'll take your word on it. I mean, Tamissima, hands down. I mean, I'm on the Tamissima fan bandwagon. I'm just such a fan.
Yeah.
But the croc train is rolling here in Texas. Yeah. Croc Fest.
Yeah.
People are still coming in.
Yeah, it's going to get crazier as the night goes on. So.
Yeah, we're still early. We're still at, almost 2:45 p.m.
Yeah, so. But maybe that last night of herping maybe took a little bit out of me, but.
Are you feeling it?
A little bit.
I mean,
it might just be the heat, so.
The heat, and I mean, we had a pretty decent brunch breakfast. Breakfast tacos or burritos for you, yeah. And breakfast tacos for me.
I'm going to be honest, those probably weren't the best tacos I had. I don't know, something about the actual tortilla itself was a little floury.
Yeah, it was a little too chewy for me.
So, it was alright, but no.
I just go there for the meat choice. Like, I'm a barbacoa fan, so I just got barbacoa. It's so good.
Yeah, just how the 100% authentic Mexican food at Chipotle.
I wouldn't compare it to that. It's a bit more authentic, but it just depends. What's your fancy? And some places do it different. But probably get some Tex-Mex if we have some free time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it makes, like, it makes a huge difference.
Who could we grab out here?
It's on my list.
Yeah, just keep talking.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned my Chinese king rat, Annabelle. So she has grown considerably since, you know, last time we talked. And obviously, you know, I roommated her for almost 3 months. And I'm thinking that's really spurring on her growth now as we're getting into the summer. But again, I will preface, of the big colubrids you can keep, I would say they're probably the most reasonable and most manageable to keep, just because their metabolism isn't as fast as indigos and falsies. Obviously, they're way more high strung than those other species, but you know, if you just do a basic handling and just taming down, they can be manageable critters.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm really excited. And she's already going through that ontogenetic color phase. She's already pretty much golden at this point, getting black and yellow. And she's only going to look better.
Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black
and yellow. And she's only going to look better as she grows. So I'm really excited with her.
Yeah, so many hip hop songs that can apply to wild animals. Turkey vultures in flight.
Or a little wings. A milli.
Yeah.
Millipede. A milli legs.
Turkey vultures in flight. Wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble.
Well, that's woodcocks with their dance. They definitely have that.
Well, you can also probably do a bit of Cupid shuffle to them as well. So.
And the chicken dance. Maybe guinea fowl. So. Something like that. Now we have a calm down here.
Yeah. Well, I could probably just edit out any stops we take, so.
Yeah. When you got up earlier, I thought you saw like a snake or something.